Call to order council meeting for July 28th. If everyone would stand for the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Remain standing for prayer.
Dear Lord, bless the citizens of this body, guide us tonight, and the future as well. Amen.
Can we have roll call?
Vice President Brown?
Here.
President Chapman?
Here.
Mr. Clark?
Here.
Ms. Morris?
She has an excused absence.
Ms. Rose?
Here.
Mr. Salters?
Here.
Mr. Sebring?
Here.
Mr. Mayor?
Here. Adoption of the agenda?
Motion to adopt as presented.
Second.
Motion by Councilman Sebring, second by President Chapman to adopt the agenda as presented.
Mr. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Chapman?
Yes.
Mr. Clark?
Yes.
Ms. Rose?
Yes.
Salters?
Yes.
Sebring?
Yes. And the agenda is adopted by a vote of 6-0. Approval of the minutes from July 14th.
I move that we approve the minutes.
Second.
Motion by President Chapman, second by Councilman Sebring to approve the July 14th minutes.
Mr. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Chapman?
Yes.
Mr. Clark?
Yes.
Ms. Rose?
Yes.
Mr. Salters?
Yes.
Yes. And those minutes are approved by a vote of 6-0. Petitions, memorials, remonstrances. I've got a couple things. I think our thoughts and prayers need to be with Cheryl Hacker and her family. She had a death in her family. That's why she's not here this evening. And also, I understand it is Councilman Brown's birthday.
30.
Under oath.
Okay, does anyone have anything else? Not, we'll move on to committee chair reports.
Mr. Mayor, copies have been distributed to council of the budget hearing schedule, which is August 4 and 6, beginning at 4 p.m. here in the chamber. And so if you have any questions about the schedule, please let me know. I also have some budget material that's been distributed by Clerk Treasurer here, so.
Mr. Mayor, a report that I attended the solid waste meeting this morning, and I have a copy of the minutes, plus the director's report and the educator's report, if anybody would like to look at these.
Councilman?
Last council meeting, we had an intergovernmental and community cooperations meeting where we discussed the issue of putting ads on vehicles, which has kind of changed. I had about 2.5 months to kind of kick around some different ideas. So Councilman Brown and I were able to kind of get together, and the idea we're kind of going with is more of kind of a sponsorship concept, and we'd like to present that to the council as a whole to see if this is a route that we want to go. And then obviously we go back in committee and kind of fine-tune what we need to kind of figure out, and then go from there to hopefully see this as a benefit to the city. So basically the concept, we would have like a sponsorship thing like this. All right, so businesses could say that they're sponsors of not just the city itself, but they could pick certain departments or pick certain areas, i.e. the park, the police department, the fire department, street and sanitation, the cemetery. So they could say, well, we want to put a certain amount of money towards this, a certain amount of money towards that, so we want to buy a new piece of equipment for the park. What we would then do is then we would have this banner where they could display in their business, outside of their business, and they could also use it in their advertising. We as a city then, we would put it on a web page, on our city web page, where we'd have a list of our sponsors to show the relationship here. So then the business itself is getting a different way of using their ad dollar, and reaching out in a different way. We as a city are able to get extra funds without reaching the taxpayer and going in the tax pockets again. So it's one of those situations where we could both benefit. And it kind of opens the door, like we want to start off and see how businesses want to do, but you could see non-for-profits doing this, maybe even individuals start doing this. And then also encourage people, hey, you know, maybe the pet port's something that's really important to me. So I see a business that supports the pet port. Maybe I'm going to go there and spend my money. I mean, we're one of those communities that we spend our money where we see it being used in the wisest way. And I think this is a route that we can go. Now, one of the things that we're going to need to figure out is applications for this. And what Councilman Brown and I thought is you would have applications here and on the city website, and they would bring them to us. And we as a city, city council could just say, yeah, this is something that we do support, and we want this business or not-for-profit to be able to use our name or kind of partner with us or not. And no, those are the things that we would have to kind of kick around. I guess what I'm asking tonight is if you all want to see us kind of move forward in this and kind of fine-tune where we need to go from this and then present a, I guess, a better version of this, and we go from there.
I just got a couple questions, and you might have discussed this last week when I wasn't here.
Okay.
Who's going to take care of all this money and collect it? And
That's going to be one of the things that we're going to have to, you know, kind of figure. Is this going to be a point like we're going to go out at the beginning of the year, whether it be the financial year in October, like, hey, we're opening it up for sponsorships. We get it at that time. And then we close it down, and then we wait a year to do that, or wait 6 months for that time period. So that's one of the things that we're going to have to kind of fine-tune in this process, how we're going to bring in funds, and then how we're going to make sure they go to the department that that business wants to use it for. Does that kind of clarify it a little bit?
Well, I'm just wondering, you know, like if the clerk treasurer's office is going to have to handle this money, and does he have the staff to do it, or?
Yeah, this is going to be something that I was. I'm hoping to get with our clerk treasurer and discuss things. I got a little held up later this month, but that's one of the issues that we're going to have to address. What would be the best route, especially to for him to deal with this, because this is going to have to be something that does go through him.
Yeah. Are you going to have different levels then of sponsorships?
I'm sure we could. I mean, we can set it, you know, basically we can do whatever we want with it right now. I mean, it's basically in its infancy. So what I want to do is kind of fine-tune this to what we want as a council. What do we want to do, and how do we want to use this to not just benefit us, but benefit the businesses as well and the citizens of our community?
Just speaking for myself, that the certainly we welcome donations, swimming pool benefited from donations. I know the Animal Control Department, they benefit from donations throughout the year, and probably some other examples. The devil's always in the details. It's been my experience, if you don't have a entity in charge of it, then who do you hold accountable, and how does... You know, just as an example, I'm a business and I want to sponsor the Parks Department this year. So I assume we have a table of how much it costs to get a sponsorship. And who is the entity that's going to, at the end of that time period, gain the renewal or go out and retrieve the sign or whatever the case may be? We just need to have an entity that is established this, that's going to be in charge, I guess, to make sure that it's carried out. And just as an example, we're going to be dealing with it later in the meeting, so it's appropriate to discuss it. We never revisited the parking tickets. I mean, I don't know when they were established at $3, but what year that was, but we didn't come back to revisit that, and so now they're woefully outdated. So we don't want that same kind of example to occur in some new system we set up. So that would be my
concern. And that, I mean, that's going to be one of the the thing that'll probably be the most difficult step is getting it set up to begin with. I think once we do get it set up and once we know what we're doing with this, and we have kind of a focus, our focus set on what we're supposed to do, I think it'll be a lot better. But it's that first step in getting there, all right? How are we going to do this? Who specifically will collect the funds and put the funds where they're intended to go, and how are we going to check on those things? So, I mean, you know, the payments and the system of checks, that's going to be one of those big things that we're going to need to address. But like I said, we, you know, kind of in its infancy right now, and the key thing that I wanted to see, if this is something that we want to try to keep fine-tuning to see if we can get something that as a whole we can approve on and we can kind of go from there. And that's what I'm asking of tonight.
Well, the one, I guess, baseline requirement I would have if we proceed with this is that all that money go through the, I would think, the clerk treasurer's office. And I don't think we want each respective department taking money as sponsorships. And, you know, then you just got more accountability issues there to deal with. I think you'd want to centralize it. So I think the discussion that probably that would need to take place is
probably the next step best would be to meet with Dave sometime soon. You think that we could do that? And all right, sounds good to me. If we can go, just start from there, baby step from there, and see where we can go.
I have a question.
You just come up to the podium. State your name and address. And
Dode Hall, 1406 Mirror Street, Vincennes. I just have a question for clarification. Mr. Salters, you're not planning on making rolling billboards out of our police cars and fire engines, are you?
And I don't.
That was one of the big issues that, you know, when I went and talked with Chief Lukey and Chief Becker, that was the main concern. We don't want to degrade the vehicles that we do have. And that was always like, well, I've seen this happen in other areas. And I've seen them do it, and it worked there. But you know what? The more you think about it and the more that I kind of kick the idea around in my head, you know, that's not for us.
No.
So I think this solves those problems that we would have had if you would have put those on there. And I think it actually opens up more opportunity for us. And makes it better. So
I wouldn't think it would be appropriate either.
Right, and I agree with that.
Anybody have anything else on this subject? You'll get with Clerk Treasurer Fault and we will move forward from there then.
Yep.
Any other committee chair reports? And then we'll move on to report of city officers. We'll move on.
Dusty Luking, Vincennes Police Department. I don't have an invitation here with me today, but I want to invite all of you out next Tuesday, August the 5th at the Rainbow Beach is National Night Out. And we'll have a lot of activities going on there, from giveaways, free food, be a lot of folks out there. And it was a great success last year, and I just want to invite everybody to stop out and see some of the things going on there with Neighborhood Watch and the community next Tuesday, 6 to 8 at Greg Park on the West End, and primarily there at Rainbow Beach. Thanks.
Thank you. Also, Mr. Mayor, the Clerk Treasurer Culp has distributed a report to the council members. Do you want to discuss that?
Yes, sir. All I want to do is just make you aware that the Redevelopment Commission financial consultant is adhering to the state law that by the end of July they have to submit the report that's in front of you, and he asked if I would do that for him this evening, and I just need to get it in the record, and that's how I've done it. So thank you.
Thank you.
Any other reports? If not, we'll move on to old business. First up is Ordinance 11-2014.
Mr. Mayor, that ordinance remains tabled.
Move move on to ordinance 18-2014. It's additional appropriation from Edit to Pay Lock Mueller Group.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we have a third reading of ordinance 18-2014.
Second.
Motion by President Chapman, second by Councilman Sebring, to have third and final reading of ordinance 18-2014.
Ordinance 18-2014, additional appropriation ordinance containing sections 1, 2, and 3 from Edit Block Mueller Group for second Bed Black Project,
Yes, Mr. Mayor, we did have a public hearing at 5:45 tonight. Let the record show that no one spoke for or against this ordinance.
Any discussion?
Call for the question.
Mr. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Chapman?
Yes.
Mr. Clark?
Yes.
Ms. Rose?
Yes.
Mr. Salters?
Yes.
Mr. Sebring?
Yes.
Third and final reading of ordinance 18-2014 passes by a vote of 6-0. Next is ordinance 19-2014, $32,925, additional appropriation from Edit to pay HWC Engineer, NDOT, and Knox County Redevelopment Corp. Your second reading was passed on 7-14.
Mayor, I move we have third reading of ordinance 19-2014.
Second.
Motion by President Chapman, second by Councilwoman Rose, to have third and final reading of ordinance 19-2014.
Ordinance 19-2014, additional appropriation ordinance containing sections 1, 2, and 3, total amount $32,925.
And Mr. Mayor, let the record show that the ordinance 19-2014 was subject of a public hearing at 5:45. No one spoke for or against this ordinance.
Any discussion?
Call for the question.
Mr. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Chapman?
Yes.
Mr. Clark?
Yes.
Ms. Rose?
Yes.
Mr. Salters?
Yes.
Mr. Sebring?
Yes.
Okay, third and final reading of ordinance 19-2014 passes by a vote of 6-0. Next is ordinance 20-2014, prohibiting the use of fireworks on all but permitted dates, times, and places. First reading was 7-14.
Mayor, I move we have second reading of ordinance 20-2014.
Second.
Motion by President Chapman, second by Councilman Sebring, to have second reading of ordinance 20-2014.
Ordinance 20-2014, an ordinance regulating the use of fireworks within the city of Vincennes, essentially prohibiting fireworks all day except those required to be permitted by state ordinance. Effective June of next year. It impacts the consumer use, but also impacts the person who provides fireworks.
I know this is probably the same things that I said last time. Like, my biggest concern with this, I think the heart's in the right spot. I just think that there might be a better route of going to deal with this issue. I know one of the things that I discussed last meeting was, let's just say, you know, hypothetically, because that's what we have to kind of go in this situation. Let's say that was the first response, was this fire, and I'll get to the point. I'll get to the second part of this here in a little bit. So let's just pretend that when they get the call for the fireworks, that's their first thing. You know, we live in a relatively small town, so they're going to respond to that firework within 5, 10, 15 minutes, right? Within that time period, you know, the chance of kind of catching that or seeing that is going to be little to none. So we know that the firework call isn't going to be the first call. It's not going to be the first priority, right? Because they do prioritize what they do. So now we're looking at things that could be, you know, 30 minutes to an hour later, that now we're addressing certain issues. So the concern that I have is we could get into a he said, she said, he said, he said kind of scenario where we're kind of wasting time on this and not really addressing the problem, because by the time you would get there, there's nothing really left. And I know this does become a problem. We've got probably, what would you say, a six-week window, maybe? Five-week window, we do have a problem with fireworks, and I'm sure everybody, every other city in town sees these kind of things. One of the things that I did look through and kind of research through and didn't kind of go anymore, because it's just kind of a, you know, we've already got this proposed right now, where the in Boonville, the merchants go to the council as a whole, and the councils give kind of an up or down where they can kind of control supply. I do like that, not just for that period, but it also gives the council as a whole a better grip of what's going on in the community and who's coming in, what's being sold, the duration of, you know, things that are being sold. And I think that could, you know, if you limit supply, maybe you could limit the problem. We're never going to be able to eliminate it, and I know we understand that, but I think that could be a better route that we go to attack this than this one.
And in response, the council member Morris did call me and advocate a similar line of reasoning about that, and wondered whether we perhaps should postpone a decision until that could be more thoroughly explored. I'm not opposed to that concept of further regulation of the merchants. However, given that this ordinance doesn't take effect until June, I'm not so sure that we couldn't come back with another amendment later if that's what we wanted to do. So I don't necessarily think we have to postpone decision on these regulations pending investigation of further regulation of the merchants. But beyond that, I'm sure you're condensing your remarks, but from the way you describe it, I don't think the council really would want to get into the business of regulating supply by sort of arbitrarily saying, well, this merchant can sell it and this merchant can't. I mean, the way the law usually works is a body like a council would set out the criteria, and then some administrative person in the city would carry that out according to what the council has outlined as a criteria. Otherwise, you know, I could see a situation where someone would come up and want to sell fireworks, and we'd all know Joe Blow, and we'd say, okay, but someone else we didn't know from out of town comes in and wants to sell it, and we go, well, no, we're going to cut the supply by not giving you a permit. So I think we could get ourselves into a little legal snafu if that's the way we tried to approach it. Beyond that, you know, we live in a society that's very mobile, and within our very constrained city limits, for us to try to say that we're going to have, say this year we had 6 fireworks merchants, and we're going to try to cut that back to 3 in order to cut supply, I think our people who wanted to fire fireworks would figure that out and go across the city limits and get the fireworks they wanted. So I don't know that would necessarily address the issue, other than depriving maybe some merchants here in the city limits the ability to sell some things. But as I said before, I really think this ordinance tries to strike that balance. I really, in talking to citizens, didn't personally come across people that objected to firing fireworks, even if they don't like them, even if it bothers their dog and wakes up their kids and all that sort of thing around the holiday period. But what I find citizens object to is that some people start celebrating the 4th of July on early June or late May and then continue it into the end of July. I think they want a reasonable period. And so I think that's what this ordinance is trying to address, to try to strike that balance between allowing celebration, allowing people to have fun and celebrate the holiday, but not extending that over such a period of time that it destroys the quality of life for people and their pets and their kids for an extended period of time.
Just for clarification's sake, I'm in agreement with Mr. Salters. I would hate for our police department to have to go chase their tail, et cetera, but I did do a little bit of researching, and from what I saw, any kind of noise ordinance, and I could have missed something, it's usually electronic devices. So the fireworks would not fall under that. And so in looking at that today, what I did see was the police department wouldn't have to, I mean, it wouldn't be a he said, she said. I mean, and I could be mistaken on this. They can just, like, just drive away, or they can go take the higher priority call. But currently, if they do stumble upon a problem, they have no authority. So is the point of this to give the officer authority that he currently does not have?
Yeah, and that's the way, really, with any law. I mean, they could sit out on Hart Street all day and run radar and get people doing 32 and a 30. And those people are breaking the law, right? But they use their judgment and they realize they've got other priorities. So this is just a, you know, if you know something's, if you know after, let's just say, I don't have the date in front of me, but say if you know after July 10th that you can't shoot fireworks off again because it's illegal, most people will abide by that. I mean, it's just like any law. They're going to say, okay, you know, and mom and dad are going to tell the kids, no, you can't shoot them off anymore because July 10th's the cutoff date. Now, somebody wants to go ahead and do it, and somebody calls the police, just like they do with every call. They have to determine, they have to adjust their priorities. I don't think they're going to get inundated with phone calls on July 15th that, you know, 10 people are shooting off fireworks at separate times of the day. So I think this just falls in the category of any law and law enforcement prioritizing, or just like the city inspector or anybody else that has enforcement capabilities is, you know, how do we want to handle this? And, you know, if they show up and a lot of kids will go, yeah, okay, yeah, we were shooting them off. And a lot of times police go, well, you know, it's past the date to do that. And so it's all a judgment call on their end, I think.
And Councilman Chatton, to answer your question, for the Boonville thing, in the email kind of correspondence that I've had, from what I understand, and obviously I haven't dug too deep into it, you can set it up however you want, whether the merchants would go and register with the mayor's assistant or the mayor's office, and then like a list of who's going to be there for the month, and the council can look through, similar to what we would get on certain sheets, or like budgetary reasons or something, like, hey, this is what's going on. If there's something that you don't approve of, then you can kind of speak up and speak out. But like I said, I haven't been able to go too deep into it. It could be something that I do look more into. And it's not that I'm saying that I'm against this. I understand the concept behind it. I just think that I think there's a better route to go for this. I don't think there's a way to completely eliminate it at all. I mean, and I don't think we're trying to eliminate it at all, because we know that that's an impossibility. There's going to be people out there that just, hey, we're going to go out there, we're going to blow stuff up because that's what they want to do. But I do think if you can kind of, and like I've said it before, if you can kind of shrink the amount that's being sold here, you could kind of shrink the problem. We're never going to be able to get rid of it. I mean, and I know we're kind of picking at straws right now. I mean, it's not like we're aggravated at each other. We're trying to figure out a way to deal with the problem. So I guess that's my two cents on the issue.
Any other discussion?
Well, just one thing, that the by setting dates, you know, that says this is when you can do it and the rest of the year you can't, it creates a little bit of simplicity that I think we can help educate people about what's right and what's wrong and what's legal and what's not. I think the chief said at one point that he didn't have many calls of complaint, and I think one of the reasons for that is a lot of citizens think that anything goes and there's really nothing in the law that can be done about it. But when we pass this, and then when it gets around July 4th or New Year's Eve, and we say, you know, in the news media and so forth, this is when you can do it and this is when you can't, I think people will understand that and be able to respond appropriately if they're being disturbed by it. So
yeah, I guess the comment that I would make, I've had a few people ask me, you know, is this ordinance going to change much, I guess, is what they've asked. And My comment would be it's going to change very little at the 4th of July and at New Year's Eve, because it's not changing the types of fireworks that can be let off, so there's still going to be loud banging fireworks that go off, and they'll be able to do that the same as they have this year and the years past since the laws changed, for about a week before and a week after, as well as on New Year's. What the ordinance would help with is the idea, once you're outside those parameters, and if someone's being a nuisance with those types of fireworks, because that's normally what the complaint is about, you know, they always say the big boomers is what they're saying, the loud exploding fireworks. We could make a trip out to that location and say, hey, you know, your neighbors have made a complaint, you know, you're not able to light off those types of fireworks, you're outside the parameters of what the ordinance says. So we could try to get that shut down. I don't think, honestly, the only time that we would have a situation, I would think, where we are just inundated with calls for fireworks is on the 4th of July itself, and the ordinance will not change what happens for us on the 4th of July or the week before or after whatsoever. So again, this ordinance, I guess I would say, would more help with the idea that it would give us the avenue that we could actually go talk to somebody and say, hey, you're not allowed to shoot those off right now. On the other side of it, people who are wanting to use them for an event or a wedding or a family get-together, they can go before the Board of Works ahead of time if they are going to be setting off the large type fireworks. So that would just be my comment. I would say, you know, again, the complaints are hit and miss. Definitely had very few times where I've heard fireworks since, you know, a couple weeks after the 4th. Again, it's just kind of hit and miss for us, and we'll do whatever you guys choose either way. But we're glad that you've at least took a look at it and checked it out at any rate.
Chief, would you say, like, the biggest area of issue is obviously the 6 week period around 4th of July? Other than that, is it, you know, basically just
every once in a while? I would say, you know, definitely going at the end of May, beginning of June is normally where we start getting calls, if we get calls. And primarily the calls are either it's very loud, it's rattling my windows, my animals are upset, or the other side of it, for our response, is there are things falling on my house. I think there's, you know, embers in the fireworks that are landing on my house or my garage. You know, I want somebody to come out because I'm afraid they're going to damage my property. And those are the times where we can make a response, as if somebody's property's been damaged or they're not being used the right way. So, but yeah, you're right. I mean, it starts end of May, beginning of June is primarily when we have those. Other than that, it's just very spotty on somebody has a barbecue and somebody for whatever reason has a lot of leftover fireworks and it's on for the night, I guess I would say. But you know, that's primarily where we see the complaints.
The two instances where the current law does give people complaining in the police department some discretion to act at other times is the current law says you have permission of the property owner.
Yes.
And I think that is probably frequently violated, as someone that lives next to a large church parking lot. That's sure. A favorite firing zone. I know as a kid I used to fire them from Leicester Square. I didn't have permission from the city to do that.
Yeah.
So I think there is some discretion to act just due to the fact they probably don't have permission from, and in fact, if they're a tenant, I dare say they probably don't have permission from their landlord to fire from their
right.
property either. So there's an area that could be addressed, I think.
And what you mentioned, the discretion before, and that's what I would say as well. I mean, there's an educational side of this as well. If the ordinance was changed, more than likely, when an officer goes out to a house, they try to talk with the person first, and it wouldn't be any different if it was a loud music call. You know, hey, the neighbors are upset with your music. They're trying to go to sleep. Could you please lower your music or put the fireworks away in this case? You know, and unless something went awry, normally that may be what shuts it down without us having to actually go through and write a ticket or whatever, but this would give us the opportunity to write a ticket if we needed to. Thank you.
Any other discussion?
Call for the question.
Mr. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Tatton?
Yes.
Mr. Clark?
Yes.
Ms. Rose?
Yes.
Mr. Salters?
No.
Mr. Seaver?
Yes.
Second reading of ordinance 2020-14 passes by a vote of 5-1.
Mayor, I move we have a third reading of ordinance 20-2014.
Second.
Got a motion by President Chatton, second by Councilwoman Rose, to have third and final reading of ordinance 2020-14.
Ordinance 2020-14, an ordinance of the Common Council of the City of Vincennes, Indiana, prohibiting the use of fireworks on all but permitted dates, times, and places, in section 1-12, and also regulating merchant.
Discussion?
Call for the question.
Mr. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Chatton?
Yes.
Mr. Clark?
Yes.
Ms. Rose?
Yes.
Mr. Salters?
No.
Mr. Sebring?
Yes.
Okay, ordinance 2020-14, third reading passes by a vote of 5-1. Now have a firework. Next is ordinance 21-2014, $64,967, additional appropriation from Knox County City and Town Court costs to Vincennes Police Department's non-reverting law enforcement continuing education fund. Your first reading was 7-14.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we table ordinance 21-2014. There's a few pending questions that the police chief and clerk treasurer are working on, I understand. So that will probably come back to us, but I would move that we table that for this meeting.
Okay. We'll leave 21-2014 tabled. Moving on to ordinance 22-2014, $121,210.25, additional appropriation from Dormant Cadet to Milestone Construction. First reading was 7-14.
Mr. Mayor, we have second reading of ordinance 22-2014.
Second.
Motion by President Chatton, second by Councilwoman Rose, to have second reading of ordinance 22-2014.
Ordinance 22-2014, additional appropriation ordinance, sections 1, 2, and 3. The Dormant Cadet Fund Contractors LP, $121,210.25.
Again, this is for the asphalt.
Right.
Pardon. By Rainbow Beach.
Right.
Mayor, this was subject of a public hearing at 5:45, and no one spoke for or against.
Any discussion?
Hearing none, I call for the question.
Mr. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Chatton?
Yes.
Mr. Clark?
Yes.
Ms. Rose?
Yes.
Mr. Salters?
Yes.
Mr. Sebring?
Yes.
Second reading of 22-2014 passes by a vote of 6-2.
Mr. Mayor, I move we have third reading of ordinance 22-2014.
Second.
Motion by President Chatton, second by Councilwoman Rose, to have third and final reading of ordinance 22-2014.
Ordinance 22-2014, additional appropriation ordinance containing sections 1, 2, and 3 from Dormant Cadet Fund to Milestone Contractors.
Any discussion?
Call for the question.
Mr. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Chatton?
Yes.
Mr. Clark?
Yes.
Ms. Rose?
Yes.
Mr. Salters?
Yes.
Mr. Sebring?
Yes.
Third and final reading of ordinance 22-2014 passes by a vote of 6-0. Next is ordinance 23-2014, $2,169.98, additional appropriation from Edit to Pay Lockmuller Group. First reading was 7-14.
Mayor, I move we have second reading of ordinance 23-2014.
Second.
Motion by President Chatton, second by Councilman Sebring, to have second reading of ordinance 23-2014.
Ordinance 23-2014, additional appropriation ordinance containing sections 1, 2, and 3 from Edit to Lockmuller Group, $2,226.60.
Mr. Mayor, this was part of a public hearing at 5:45. No one spoke for or against.
Okay, any discussion?
What was this for, Mayor?
That's what I'm looking for.
I've got it marked here.
Back to mine. Ito seconds, Reader second, Niblack project.
Leo second, Niblack.
Mr. Relligan, what was the amount you read off there again?
Yeah, second, Niblack.
$2,226? Okay, I've got $2,169.98.
Thank you.
What's on our?
What's that?
You on the same page?
I've got, what's the question here?
22.
In our
Packet, it's got
It is correct in the ordinance, the agenda, it is a slightly lower amount. Huh? Yeah, let's
My apologies, can you read the correct amount again?
We don't know.
I'm reading it right out of the July 14 packet, so that is the, that's what we adopted on first reading.
$2,169.
Typo.
Any discussion?
Question.
Mr. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Chapman?
Yes.
Mr. Clark?
Yes.
Ms. Rose?
Yes.
Mr. Salters?
Yes.
Mr. Sebring?
Yes.
Second reading of ordinance 23-2014 passes by a vote of 6-0.
Mr. Mayor, I move we have third reading.
Second.
Motion by President Chapman, second by Councilwoman Rose, to have third and final reading of ordinance 23-2014.
Ordinance 23-2014, additional appropriation ordinance, section 1.3. From edit to Lock Mueller Group, but having learned my lesson. No, man.
Any discussion?
Call for the question.
Mr. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Chapman?
Yes.
Mr. Clark?
Yes.
Ms. Rose?
Yes.
Mr. Salters?
Yes.
Mr. Sebring?
Yes.
Third and final reading of ordinance 23-2014 passes by a vote of 6-0. Moving on to new business, first is ordinance 24-2014, amending 93.003 schedule of fees for Animal Welfare Department.
Mayor, I move we have first reading of ordinance 24-2014.
Second.
Motion by President Chapman, second by Councilman Sebring, to have first reading of ordinance 24-2014.
Ordinance 24-2014, an ordinance of the Common Council of the City of Vincennes, Indiana, amending section 91.003 schedule of fees for Vincennes Animal Welfare Department.
Any discussion?
You can take it just like everything else, we're seeing rising costs, and this is gonna help us, right?
We added a lot more things.
Deborah?
Right.
Step up here.
I printed out some stuff for you guys to see.
All right, sounds great.
So these are, this is our cost. So when we take an animal in, we always microchip it, vaccinate it, give it Advantage Multi or Revolution. And then after the 5 days is up, we heartworm test it. We test it for feline leukemia and feline AIDS, and we spay and neuter them. And so this kind of breaks it down to what the actual cost is. So if you were to come in and to adopt an animal from the animal shelter on day six that it's walked in the door, this is how much the city has put into it. And that's just the cost on the products. That doesn't include the, you know, what the efforts that the employees have put into it, the food and all those kind of things, because we're paid for those kind of things. But we're lucky enough to have me, who was trained to be able to do some of these tests so we can do them at the animal shelter and save a lot and not have to do them out at the vet. And then I've also kind of broken down the cost exactly, because it's a different price to spay and neuter a dog. I mean, it's different. It costs more to spay it than it does to neuter it. And so I kind of came up with an average price, and you can kind of see where I broke those down. And so as you can see, the cost that we put in to an animal is pretty close to what we charge for an adoption, and it's fair. I've called several different animal shelters in the surrounding areas and gone through what they've charged and what they offer, and we are definitely stars in this. We're leading a very good example in what we're doing, and we're making sure that we're putting healthy animals out into the community so that the people, our community that adopts them, are getting healthy, sterilized animals. And so it's good for our citizens, and it's good for our community as well.
Thank you very, very much for the explanation. We do appreciate the work that you guys are doing down there. I know my mother-in-law was very happy with the dog that she recently adopted from there.
Yes. She was one of my favorites. Your mother-in-law as well as Stella.
do the fees, you say you check with the other shelters, are you saying that these fall in line with what they are charging, or how does it compare?
They fall in line as kind of a comparison. Like, for example, Sullivan, they charge $175 for a puppy and $125 for a dog, and they do a lot of the same things that we do. And it's, so that's really the biggest apples to apples. Evansville, they charge $110 for a dog and $100 for a cat, but they don't check for heartworm disease, and they don't check for feline leukemia and feline AIDS. The reason I think it's really important, of everything that we're doing, we're checking for these things, is because what's really bad is for one of our citizens to come in and adopt an animal, and they've got a big heart, they've come out and rescued an animal, and then for a few days later for it to get really sick, to have to take it to the veterinarian and have a huge bill. Because I mean, I worked for a veterinarian, and the first thing that they're going to do when a dog starts coughing is they're going to go, okay, we're going to check this dog for heartworm disease. That's the first thing they do. And then if that dog does have heartworm disease, depending on the weight and the size of the dog, it could be upwards of $400. And so I'd be pretty disappointed myself if I went to rescue a dog from the city animal shelter, and then and even if I only paid $10 for it, and now I'm burdened with this huge bill of, okay, now I'm a jerk if I don't treat this animal for heartworms, but it's a huge expense. And so we've kind of weeded those out. So we do actually have dogs at the animal shelter that are heartworm positive, and we have fundraisers to try to treat those before they get adopted. But we have special rates on those dogs if someone does want to adopt them. Actually, as an example, Mr. Salter's mother-in-law and father-in-law adopted one of our dogs with heartworm disease. And so what we do when people want to adopt a dog that has heartworm disease is, of course, they can go ahead and have it treated. They can talk to the veterinarian and decide if they want to have it treated. But we don't charge them an adoption fee. We make sure that they buy Advantage Multi, which is something that basically suppresses the microfilaria so that it doesn't spread to the, even though it's not contagious from dog to dog, so the mosquitoes don't pick it up on the infected dog and infect someone else's dog. And so and that's about the same price as adoption. So that's what we do in that instance. But at least they know going into it, at least that we don't say, okay, we think we have a guess that this is a healthy dog. And I think that's a better thing to do for our citizens. So yeah, so I actually guess I went off subject a little bit. So there's several areas. You can actually go across the bridge and run over to Lawrenceville, and you can adopt anything for $10. It's only $10. However, they're not spayed, they're not neutered, they're not vaccinated, they're not tested, and so it's really easy. Somebody can come in and make a really impulsive decision on a $10 animal. And we do have a problem in Vincennes with animals running at large that aren't vaccinated, that aren't wearing any tags, and that's something that we are currently working on, and I believe this is one of the ways to fix that problem. And so if you can go out and impulsively get a new pet for $10, you're less likely to do and follow up with its needs. And a lot of these places, their animals were not spayed and neutered at the time of adoption. It's the responsibility of the person adopting the animal to take it to the vet and have it spayed and neutered. And You know, we've tried that in this area before, and unfortunately, it doesn't always work. Time gets in the way, people get busy, they forget to sterilize, and they end up with a litter of puppies or kittens, and then we have, you know, another 8 to 10 animals to take care of.
I know the extra time and the work and the stuff that you guys have been putting in, from the people that I've talked with, they're very pleased with what's going on in the pet port right now. So thank you. Thank you very much.
We haven't had anybody complain about the prices. I mean, we haven't had anybody come in and stomp their feet and go, well, I'm not going to pay that much for it. And also, we have a foster to adopt program. So we encourage people to take animals home, and they have up to a week to try the animal out to make sure it works with their other pets at home, with their children, and with the rest of their family members. And if it works, then that's fabulous. They can come in and do the adoption. If it doesn't work, that's okay too. We have a little questionnaire that we ask them to fill out to see exactly, that gives us more information about the animal. So it's a win-win for all of us. And the public's been really receptive to that program.
I certainly appreciate the effort to cover costs. I guess the one fee on here that troubles me, and this has been a longstanding issue with me, is the drop-off of owned animals, a $50 fee. I continue to believe that when a person comes to that point of dropping off their own pet, it is they've already gone through a kind of a heart-wrenching process, and it's not something that anyone wants to do. And often it is driven by their own financial precarious situation, or they have had to move to a new residence, and that landlord or whatever will not allow an animal at that new residence, or they've been laid off from their job, or child's become sick and they have enormous medical bills. There's all sorts of reasons that a person can legitimately, if you will, come to a decision to have to surrender a pet. Old age, break a leg, they can no longer walk their animal, all kinds of reasons. And it just is troubling to me that we would then charge a $50 fee to that, to a person in that predicament. And beyond just the compassion of it, human nature being what it is, my assumption has always been that if our animal shelter turns down an owner surrendered animal, that probably with a high degree of likelihood, that person drives slightly outside town, drops off the animal and speeds off, or as someone who used to live two blocks from JC's grocery store, they drive up, push the dog out near the entrance to the store and speed off, because just seen that happen, and they hope that it gets adopted. But neither one of those scenarios is a good result for a pet. So anyway, I didn't mean to get so long-winded, but the that particular fee concerns me, because I don't think that, I mean, I'm sure there are some people that are heartless and do it willy-nilly, but I bet that they're a small percentage of the total.
That's definitely a problem that we have at the animal shelter. We've continued to be a no-kill shelter, with the exception of aggressive animals and animals that are too sick to treat. With the amount of dogs that we pick up on a weekly basis, in order for us to stay a no-kill shelter, we do have to turn things away. There's just no way around it. It's either kill for space or take every single thing that comes through the door. And right now, I believe the community is very happy having a no-kill shelter. Again, with those exceptions of aggressive animals and animals that are too sick to treat. And it is a problem. We take everything in. Pretty much anytime a surrender comes in, it's going to go through me. We don't get a lot of people that come in to surrender. More often than not, we are out in the community with a reported problem. You know, that someone calls in on a complaint, we go out there and we end up asking for a surrender if these people can't take care of their animals and they're happy. Usually we're saving them. So we do take in those cases. As far as the fees go, the reason that I'd like to see this fee, and sometimes I'd like to see it higher, because we have people that come outside of our community to surrender animals. We have people that get a puppy and they try it out. Now, if someone comes in with a heart-wrenching story, they're losing their house and they have to surrender their dogs, we don't turn them away. And in many cases, we don't charge them a fee at all. It just really depends. We'll come out and we'll ask them to do community service, and they'll come and do those kind of things. We really want to be friends with the public that's our community. We want to work along them, and that's what we try to do. That's what we strive to do. So, you know, if that's the only thing that keeps these, sorry.
Go ahead, but I think Section 1B addresses that. It basically says fees will be waived only at the discretion of the director of Vincent's Animal Welfare Department.
Right.
Which means if somebody came in with a story like that, you could actually waive that fee and take that animal.
Yes. And in a lot of cases, when someone comes out on their first try, you know, we will advise them. We'll show them how to try to rehome their animal. There's several Facebook pages. We'll allow them to use our Facebook page, and we try to direct them on, you know, let's try to come up with a different way on this. And depending on the animal, sometimes if an animal comes in, if somebody brings a Yorkie in to me, then we'll take it in a second. Even if it does cost us this, if we have to sterilize it, but at least we know we're sterilizing the animal and we're giving it everything that it needs, and it's going to go to a home that it's wanted. So the fee is there, and I would have liked to make the fee higher so that people don't get into a commitment. There's too many free puppies out there, and people get them and they hold on to them for about 12 weeks, and that's usually when we get them in, when they are puppies with bad manners and they're much harder to adopt out. So I'd like to do my best to stop that. Now, are they going to dump them out anyways? Yes, I know they're going to dump them out anyways. The reason that I know that is because we pick up 12 to 15 dogs every single week, and then we get nothing at all from them. It's a balance. There's a lot of things that we've changed out at the animal shelter that we're trying to where hopefully in a couple of years, this won't be such a burden. We're microchipping every animal, and we're sterilizing every animal before it walks out the door. So hopefully we're doing things now that in the future will prevent some of these problems, and we won't have such a thing. And then when someone comes in and they come in to surrender, we won't all go, oh my gosh, where the heck are we going to put it? We'll go, you know, I'm sorry this is happening to you. Come this way and let me help you. And that's where I'd like to get to a point.
Laura, your summation just really said it all. I mean, it really, as you've set the tone and set the bar so high for your department, I cannot tell you how happy I am of the work you're doing. And with that, I call for the question.
Thanks.
Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Chapman?
Yes.
Mr. Clark?
Yes.
Ms. Rose?
Yes.
Mr. Salter?
Yes.
Mr. Sebring?
Yes. First reading of Ordinance 24-2014 passes by a vote of 6-0. Move on to Ordinance 25-2014, amending 70.99 penalty for parking violations.
Mr. Mayor, I move a first reading of Ordinance 25-2014.
Second.
Motion by President Chapman, second by Councilman Sebring, to have first reading of Ordinance 25-2014.
Ordinance 25-2014, an ordinance of the Common Council of the City of Houston, amending Section 70.99 penalty for parking violations, $25 for normal parking violations, $50 for handicapped spots, $10 additional for these additional violations.
So would that be, I just want to try to clarify this. So let's say a person gets a parking violation, it's 25, they get another one, it's 35, another one's 45. This keeps going up by 10, right?
Yeah.
All right, then the handicap will go up by 25, right? All right.
Correct.
Just making sure.
And this isn't really meant to be so much as a punitive thing as it is an update. I mean, we've been paying our $3 for our parking fees forever, and it's just kind of a time to get with the times, and a lot of this This basic idea kind of stemmed from a conversation between myself, President Chatton, and Assistant Chief Johnson, Officer Hensley. That's kind of really where the thought first began, and you know, the officers, you know, did also say that this would be, and this is why we have half of the fines going into the Police Department Non-Reverting Education Fund. This can be, you know, a way to, just a win-win situation for all, a way to help control the parking and get revenue for the city and for the police department.
Any other discussion?
Call for the question.
So, will this be paid through the clerk treasurer's office also?
Yes.
Where they're presently paid through the clerk treasurer's office.
That's not changing.
And I might add that the money goes to the general fund. It's not just okay. Laura.
Half.
Well, okay. I'm okay. Sorry. Half of that one. I was still on the dog. Anyway, those funds go to the general fund. So, okay. You know, she's out there making money for the city.
I will comment. I had a couple people call me on this one and express that $25 is too high for a first parking violation. I'll just tell you what I told them, that at 25 we're under what most other communities are at right now.
Park in Indianapolis.
It does. And as someone whose daughter used to live in Bloomington and frequently got parking tickets and called Dad, I can tell you that we're well under Bloomington. I pay personally several streets in the city of Bloomington. So,
plus, they not only give you the ticket, they tow you away and then charge you.
I would suggest, however, as we proceed on this, that, and I don't know what the cost is, so if it's prohibitive, you know, come back and tell me, but in Bloomington, they make it very easy for you to pay. I mean, you get your notice, and it's got the website, and you can pay online, and they want your credit card. And if you don't pay in that first 10 days, it doubles, and it doubles. We might want to explore making it convenient for people to pay, because when you get that notice and you see what's going to happen to you if you don't pay in a certain period of time, you have a real motivation to get online and do it. So anyway, that's just a thought. But
hearing no further debate, I call for the question.
Mr. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Chatton?
Yes.
Mr. Clark?
Yes.
Ms. Rose?
Yes.
Mr. Salters?
Yes.
Mr. Sebring?
Yes.
First reading of Ordinance 25-2014 passes by a vote of 6-0. Next is Ordinance 26-2014, $28,136.50, additional appropriation from Riverboat to Falcon, from EDIT to SME and HWC.
I move we have a first reading of Ordinance 26-2014.
Second.
Motion by President Chatton, second by Councilwoman Rose, to have first reading of Ordinance 26-2014.
Ordinance 26-2014, additional appropriation ordinance 1-3 from Riverboat Fund, Falcon, Street Department Equipment, Townfield Grant, and Credit, HWC Engineering on Riverwalk Design.
Mr. Mayor, can you explain what a hot box is?
That is the equipment that they haul around to keep the asphalt material hot while they're patching.
I mean, do we not have, it's like, don't we have, we need a new one, or we want an extra one?
We have one, now we have two.
Now we've got two.
Because when you only, with the one, we can only send out one crew. And that's
right, so this will allow us to do, this allows us to do two crews, speed up.
Right.
So pothole patrol will just be out there patrolling.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
And if you remember, I'd asked for, we were looking at a infrared machine to do the repairs. After discussing with Bryce, we thought the better route would be to go get another hot box piece of equipment so they could have two crews out rather than Bryce.
Call for the question.
Mr. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Chapman?
Yes.
Mr. Clark?
Yes.
Ms. Rose?
Yes.
Mr. Salters?
Yes.
Mr. Sebring?
Yes.
First reading of ordinance 26-2014 passes by a vote of 6-0. Next is ordinance 27-2014, change of zoning ordinance 823 Hart Street from R2 to C2, also known as 520 North 9th Street.
Mayor, I move we have a first reading of ordinance 27-2014 and refer to Area Plan Commission.
Second.
Motion by President Chapman, second by Councilwoman Rose to have first reading of ordinance 27-2014 and refer to Area Plan.
I'm sorry, looking at your plan here, I notice this is just...
Wait.
I'm sorry.
This is ordinance 27-2014, rezoning petition, zone 820 Hart Street from R2 to C2.
We good, Dave? Right, looking at your plan, this is the church at 9th and Hart Street, correct?
Yes.
In a complete residential area.
I wouldn't call it quite a complete residential area, and just for the record, Jill Doggett, I'm here on behalf of the petitioner. There are residences that are around the church. My client actually owns the residence that's right next door to the church. There's an apartment complex that's actually across the street from the church. And there was a barber shop that was located behind the church. I think it was called Alley Haircuts, maybe. And there are a couple of residences that are behind the church. That's correct. But they did have that barber shop that was there. They are a block or so away from some of the more commercial areas there on 7th Street, and then we are a little ways away from the railroad tracks that kind of marks the transition into more commercial areas on the other side of Hart Street.
What about parking?
That's a great question. There is not a separate lot for the church. My client has been in some discussions with Greg Parsley from the VCSC. Mm-hmm. There is the parking lot that isn't really being used often that's owned by the school corporation there by Klein Realty. So we are in discussions to see if we might be able to use that as some off-street parking or off-location parking.
Which would be about two blocks away, two, three blocks away?
Three.
Two and a half, three. Okay.
Correct.
What hours are you wanting to have your venue open? I'm sorry for those who don't have the agenda in front of them. This is for a proposal to turn the old church at 9th and Hart Street into a music venue and arcade and billiard venue as well. And wanting to operate
under the zoning ordinance, since it would be what they would call a commercial recreation facility, which would allow the music in addition to some of the games and areas. And this is the petitioner, Rick Jenkins, so he can answer some of those specific questions.
We're thinking 5 to 3 a.m. And that's after the hours that parking lot by the school corporation. The library basically stops about then, and I could have it from 5 on by hours.
Okay. Thank you for coming to us. I just don't see it fitting in with the zoning ordinance. I really don't. As a former member of the Area Plan Commission, I just don't see it fitting in with the zoning ordinance. So that's my two cents.
And we do, of course, appreciate your opinion. We are asking to be forwarded on this evening to allow us to have the public hearing at Area Plan. Their next hearing is on August the 5th, and we have submitted our paperwork to Area Plan. We've contacted the surrounding landowners, so I expect that we'll have a lively discussion on that evening. This is, just so the council knows,
we're anticipating all different types of music. My client is a classically trained musician, a very talented pianist. So it's, you know, looking at classical music, bluegrass music, acoustic music, you know, things that are maybe not traditionally what you would think of when you're thinking of live music. There's a real... there's lots of talented musicians that perform in Evansville and Terre Haute, and as they're, you know, traveling, don't necessarily stop in our area because we don't, you know, necessarily have a venue for them. So those are, you know, some of the folks that we're hoping to capture, and we think it would be an exciting opportunity for folks in Vincennes who are music lovers. The church is actually very well laid out, you know, the sanctuary part. It was, you know, kind of designed to play music, you know, more of a church and organ style music, but the building is you know, very structurally sound, so it's not something where the music is really going to be escaping or being loud, you know, coming out of the building. It is an area where there is a lot of traffic and sometimes train noise, so we don't feel like, you know, the noise of the music would much exceed some of the noise that's already there in the area.
Well, and I think it's an exciting venture as well. It's the location that I take issue with. I mean, if this was going in downtown, I wouldn't even question. I'd say, where do I sign up? I'll be there every weekend. So you know, I mean, it's a great idea. It's a great concept. It's just where it's going. So that's.
Everybody I talk to, even right around the area, doesn't seem to pose it, worry about it. And I know that, I mean, we get like 80 decibels probably inside the church. You won't hear music coming out because it's definitely going to get masked. Always going to get masked by that traffic noise. So, houses, pass on that. Meeting? There's already a big noise problem there on Hart Street. Vectren did the patches that work with Vectren. Trucks go over, the load shake, loud sound that like every couple of minutes, right at Hart and 9. Very, no way the sound is hit above that. I plan, because of the location, I do plan to make more of a hello club. Had like a rock band on Saturday. But we could conform, you know, we could soundproof the windows. I want to keep the stained glass window. I would rather just keep the volume lower so sound is a problem.
If we send this to area plan, do you think those neighbors that you say are in support of this, do you think they'll show up to that meeting showing their support for
it? I might be able to get a couple of them to show up. It's a question of will they bother to.
Have you sent your letters out yet?
Yes, we did. The letters went out last week.
And you haven't heard back?
We've got one phone call at our office, and it was more of a just what, you know, what's this all about type phone call. We haven't heard, you know, much either way from the surrounding landowners just yet.
And just for clarification, you have not secured the parking lot, correct?
No, we are still in discussions about the parking. We're hoping to get some of these things lined out fully before the area plan meeting on the 5th.
It was okay.
That parking lot is right next to the city.
Sure. And we have, my client spoke with Mr. Parsley. I've spoken with Jonathan Favel about it. We have not discussed it with Klein. The zoning ordinance doesn't necessarily require that, but I think we're all about trying to be a friendly neighbor in all avenues of this, so it's certainly something we could discuss with him.
Well, it has been our process for many years to allow the full hearing to take place at the Area Plan Commission, so that would be my recommendation, is that we allow the process to go forward and see what happens at Area Plan on the 5th, and then we will get a report back on what happened.
Any other discussion?
Mr. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Chapman?
Yes.
Mr. Clark?
Yes.
Ms. Rose? Mr. Salters?
Yes.
Mr. Sebring?
Yes.
First reading of Ordinance 27-2014 passes by a vote of 6-0 and is referred to Area Plan.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments.
Okay, thanks. Next is claims.
Mayor, I move we approve claims totaling $674,663.64.
Motion by President Chatton, second by Councilwoman Rose, to pay the claims in the amount of $674,663.64.
Call for the question.
Mr. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Chapman?
Yes.
Mr. Clark?
Yes.
Ms. Rose? Mr. Salters?
Yes.
Yes.
Claims are paid by a vote of 6-0. I just need a motion.
Motion to adjourn.
We are adjourned.